Good evening, everybody. Man, I feel like I'm about to fall asleep. I think you guys are asleep. Wake up, Jeremy. Good evening.
Good evening.
We've got some visitors tonight. I'm glad you guys are here. If you're wondering why a whole bunch of us are wearing the same t-shirts, we had our Bible Bowl competition this afternoon. This was a year where the official Bible Bowl in Cookeville, most of us had conflicts and couldn't go, so Mike and Tammy opened up their home to us and allowed us to come in, and we had a period of fellowship, and the kids got to show off their newly minted knowledge of the Gospel of Matthew, and it was a good time. Appreciate everyone who was involved in that. Even if you were not able to be at the thing today, I know there was a lot that were involved in our practices. Additional kids and adults that helped out with that, and we really appreciate that. What it's all about is learning Scripture, and this was learning the Gospel of Matthew, and it's been a benefit to me. I even thought that when we were going through the questions today, like how much it has kind of refreshed, you know, my knowledge of Matthew, and I greatly appreciate that, and it's kind of cool to see that, you know, the kids knowing the answers to these questions. So tonight, those of you that are visiting with us, we're doing something a little weird on Sunday nights. We are doing a series called Unsolved Mysteries of the Bible, where each time we do one of these, we ask a question for which we do not know the answer. And if you're thinking like, well, what's the point of that? Can't you just say we don't know and sit down? Well, I could. I could do that. But we'll talk a little bit about efforts that have been made to answer the question, and then ultimately why it doesn't matter what the answer to the question is, or why it's not important that we know. So we're in lesson three. We've already done, let me think about it, who was the Pharaoh of the Exodus? And we did 2 weeks ago, what time of year was Jesus born? We talked about those two. This time, totally coincidence, Jeff did a lot of his lesson in Sunday school this morning about Noah and Noah building the ark. And tonight we're going to ask the question, where is Noah's ark? What happened to Noah's ark? As soon as I announced that this morning, I think it was Kyle, right? Kyle came straight up to me and goes, it's in northern Kentucky. And I was like, he's stealing my thunder, because that's the slide I already had prepared. Obviously, this is a little bit, a few years have happened since we took this picture. You can see how little Sarah is and how much younger Kate is. But this was right after, I mean, within a year probably of that, the Ark opening, the Ark exhibit opening in Kentucky. And if you've never been to that, it's worth your time. Just seeing the scale of what, you know, because it's built to scale, to the dimensions that are listed in Genesis. And so it's worth seeing the scale and you know, even going inside and touring around. You can also tell because this wood looks brand new, and I think it's turned a little more gray over the years since this has been built. But anyway, that is not the real Ark, but is a reproduction. Another picture of it from close up. Massive structure, but again, built to the specifications. Built to the specifications given to Noah in Genesis. Now, on the handout, anybody not get a handout that wants one? Anybody not get one? Going. Everybody got one? Yes? No? All right. Well, my daughter's got some more if anybody needs one. On the handout, what we're going to do tonight, we'll talk about first about why we don't know the answer to this, why we don't know where Noah's Ark is. And then maybe a little different than what we've done the last two is that there has been no lack of effort to find Noah's Ark over the centuries, and especially in the last 100 years where we have recorded, you know, attempts to find the Ark. So we're going to talk through a few of those, and then we'll end with why it doesn't matter. But the specifics of this, that most of us know the story of Noah's Ark, but I want to go back and just read a couple of passages to you. So if you've got your Bible with you, turn to Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6, and again, I'm guessing most of us know this story, but just in case, Genesis 6, I'm going to begin in verse 11, okay? It says, "Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood, rooms in the ark, and cover it. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you were to make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. I believe a cubit was 18 inches. Its breadth, 50 cubits. Its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above, and set the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you." Again, God speaking to Noah. "And you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind. Two of every sort shall come into you to keep them alive. Also, take with you every sort of food that is eaten, and store it up. It shall serve as food for you and for them." It says Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. And again, most of us know that story. But now if you flip over to Genesis chapter 8, we're now at the point where the rain has stopped and the flood is receding. Okay? Pick up in chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. Okay? It says, "But God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the livestock that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind blow over the earth, and the waters subsided. The fountains of the deep and the windows of the heavens were closed. The rain from the heavens was restrained, and the waters receded from the earth continually. At the end of 150 days, the waters had abated. And in the seventh month of the seventh, on the 17th day of the month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters continued to abate until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen." There's a phrase in there that says that the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Now, part of the problem, and I've got this labeled in the section on the handout about why this is unsolved, is the dilemma of where are the mountains of Ararat? Okay? The assumption in modern day times is that this is referring to Mount Ararat that is in eastern Turkey today. But that is of great dispute as to what that actually referred to. Many scholars believe that the mountains of Ararat not referred to a single mountain peak or even a small mountain range, but a huge mountain range in a land, an area that is referred to, I've got this in the handout, two other places, 2 Kings 19 and Isaiah 37, referred to as the land of Ararat. That this is describing a country, if you will, a region, not just a single mountaintop. Okay? There are many who speculate that this was the ancient area known as Urartu, and I've got that in there. And there, this is a map of what scholars think Urartu covered. This is 100,000 square miles. It's what's in the yellow. Now, modern-day Mount Ararat is in this area, but you can see Urartu was so much larger than just that mountain peak of what was believed to be the land of Ararat, what it would have been in the time of Noah, okay? So, whether it's a single mountain, we'll talk about the mountain of Ararat in a minute, the modern-day Mount Ararat, or this large area, there is a large area to cover, okay? So we're, number one, we're unsure what the location was. What did, you know, if Moses wrote Genesis, what did he mean by the mountains of Ararat? Was that referring to a single mountain, or was that referring to mountains within this massive, you know, geographical region? We don't know. And that's one of the reasons why it's not answered, okay? Probably not the most significant reason it's not answered. But the second thing is, what was the ark made out of? Yeah, gopher wood. I've heard all kinds of explanations of what gopher wood might be. I don't know what it is, but I know it's wood, and wood comes from a tree, right? Okay, I know that much about it. And how long has it been since that boat came to rest in those mountains? At least 4,000 years, okay? It is very difficult to think that a structure made of wood has lasted for 4,000 years. And, you know, one of the things in Israel, again, I've had the privilege to go there a couple times, is the things that you see in archaeological excavations that are, you know, up to 2,000 years old and older, they're generally not wood. We're talking about, these are bricks, stones, those kinds of things that are being uncovered. I can only think of one example. You guys correct me if I'm wrong. I can only think of one example where even a tiny piece of wood was found that dates back to the first century AD. We're talking about 2,000 years before that. So, you know, wood is not something that is going to last for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And we know from Scripture that it was made, from Genesis 6:14, that it was made of wood. The second thing was related to the how long it would last. If, and this is a big if based on the first one, if what is referred to as the mountains of Ararat is the modern-day Mount Ararat in eastern Turkey, which, by the way, I've got this in the notes. Mount Ararat today in eastern Turkey is actually two mountains. There's a greater Ararat and a lesser Ararat. The greater is 16,854 feet above sea level. This is a big mountain, okay? Sometimes in Israel they talk about Mount such and such, like Mount Tabor. It's like 900 feet above sea level. No, this is 17,000 feet above sea level. This is a massive mountain. Even lower Ararat is 12,782 feet high. These are huge mountains, but it's a volcano. It's a dormant volcano today, but it was active until 1840. So we're talking about if this was the spot, not only is it very unlikely that a wooden structure is going to last for 4,000 years, especially sitting on top of an active volcano. Okay, so you take all of these things and you go, it totally makes sense why we don't know where it is, right? Most likely, it no longer exists in any solid, you know, any singular form or even large chunks of it, most likely do not exist and have it for, you know, millennia, okay? But that is, you know, some of the reasons why this is unanswered. But even though all of those things are in play, that has not prevented many, many, many explorers from trying to find it. Now, we're going to go through, I think, five I've got in here. We're going to go through five of these. And that expeditions or a series of expeditions that have tried to and have claimed in some form or fashion to have uncovered the Ark. Okay? Noah's Ark. I put the first one is on here because this is the first one that I became aware of, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. But the first one I've got listed in the handout is the Dur-Pinar site, okay? And this starts with 1948, that there was an arc-shaped formation that was found on the summit, you know, 15 miles from the summit of Ararat. By the way, I've got a picture here. This is modern-day Mount Ararat, okay, in Turkey. So this is Greater Ararat, and you can see, I mean, that's a mountain, okay? That's a mountain, okay? That's not a hill. That's a mountain. And then this is Lesser Ararat, so 17,000 feet, almost 13,000 feet above sea level, covered in snow, all right? So this one was, you know, an arc-shaped formation that was found in 1948, approximately 15 miles from the summit. So if you take the peak and you draw a 15-mile circle around it, it's within the 15 miles of the peak. In 1960, an expedition went to this spot and said, hey, all we found was dirt and rocks. That's all we found, dirt and rocks. Okay? Then an individual, an explorer named Ron Wyatt. Now, this is the guy that I became familiar with. Again, the first expedition I ever heard of about Noah's Ark, Ron Wyatt. Okay. He went on expeditions in the 70s and the 80s, and he published his findings, I believe, in the late 80s, early 90s. And what he claimed was, and I've got this in there, that he had gone in with a frequency generator to cover this spot, and that the frequency generator had shown that there were metal fillings within the rock and dirt that had to have come from the metal used to put the wood together that made up the ark. Now, again, we're not told in Scripture that metal was used, but that's what he said, okay? So this is the spot, okay? You notice on this, you know, again, this the mountain range of Ararat. You notice this little formation right here that's sort of boat-shaped, sort of kind of boat-shaped right here. This is it, okay? And then in this picture, here's Ron Wyatt, okay, standing up above this formation that he claimed this is definitely Noah's Ark. Now, the reason why I became familiar with this was my dad, when I was a teenager, this came out in December of 91, he subscribed to this Nashville business and lifestyle magazine. Ron Wyatt was from Nashville. And he subscribed to this, and I saw this cover, and I loved Indiana Jones. And I'm like, ooh! That guy looks like Indiana Jones. I'm going to read this article. So that's how I became familiar with Ron Wyatt. And we're going to talk about Ron Wyatt in some other lessons that we do in the future, because he's had several incredible discoveries, according to him. But he claimed that he found Noah's Ark. Now, many more expeditions have gone to this spot in the several decades since the late 80s when Ron Wyatt said, hey, this is Noah's Ark. And it is, from that point forward, universally declared, this is nothing more than a geological formation. This is rock and dirt. That's all it is. It's rock and dirt and wishful thinking that it's sort of boat-shaped, and this is definitely Noah's Ark. That, again, modern scholars, you know, universally reject the idea that this is Noah's Ark. Now, the second site, back on page 2 of your handout, the second site that I've labeled here is the Ahura Gorge. I mentioned that this is, again, on modern-day Mount Ararat. I mentioned that Mount Ararat, modern Mount Ararat, is a dormant volcano that had been active until 1840. 1840 was the last eruption, okay? And in the last eruption, below the peak, and I've got this in the notes, you know, 1 mile below the peak, this eruption formed, the eruption and the associated earthquake formed a gorge. So, like, you know, the terrain collapsed, a gorge was formed. And in that gorge, okay, there is a young man, his name was George, and I've got this in the notes, I'm probably going to butcher his last name, Hagopian, an Armenian, who said that when he was a child, now he said this as an adult, he said that when he was a child, his uncle took him to this gorge and that they found the ark. And that his uncle lifted him up, stood on rocks, lifted him up as a child, and let him run around on the roof of the ark. Okay? And then he, trying to think the sequence, he commissioned a painter to do a painting with his description. I was almost thinking like if you were going to give a description to a police investigator that's trying to come up with what the criminal looks like. He's like, this is before photography, you know. So he's like, I'm going to describe to you what I found and you paint, okay? We're talking about early 1900s, okay? I'll describe it to you, you paint, okay? And so this is the Ahura Gorge. You can see this giant valley below the peak of Ararat. By the way, what formed the gorge? An earthquake and an eruption. What happens when you have an eruption? Molten lava. So, again, back to our why is this unanswered. If there was a wooden boat sitting there and this gorge was formed and it fell into it by molten lava, again, what are the chances there's actually a boat there? But then this is what the painter painted. with this, you know, this wooden boat here, and his uncle's lifting him up to climb this magical staircase that has appeared out of the back of the boat, you know, for him to climb up to the top. So anyway, that's the second sight. Again, it seems exceptionally unlikely that a wooden boat would have survived a volcanic eruption. The third one of these, called the Ararat Anomaly, actually came from an Air Force reconnaissance plane that took black and white pictures over Mount Ararat. Now, these were not made public until 1995. Okay, these were you know, top secret up until 1995, and then they were released in 1995. But in these pictures, there was this what looks like an object jutting out from the peak of the mountain. And in 1995, they saw these images, they're like, oh, that's gotta be Noah's Ark. And most likely, it's just an anomaly, a geographical. I mean, I look at that and I'm like, how could you possibly see that picture and go, woo, that's Noah's Ark? It's kind of like when a doctor shows me a medical image and is like, you know, hey, this is what we saw. Unless it's a broken bone, it's like, I don't know, I worked for doctors for years. And I remember one time a doctor pulled me in and he goes, look at that. Isn't it the biggest one of those you've ever seen? I go, I'll take your word for it. I have no idea what I'm looking at. That's when I look at this and go, I would have never in a million years looked at that and gone, that's Noah's Ark right there. You know, that's definitely Noah's Ark. Now, this is a more modern picture that has been taken of that same spot, which just looks like a ridge within a mountain. So, again, the Ararat Anomaly. Anyway, so this next one, the NAMI expedition. Now, I want to make sure I get this right, what NAMI stands for. NAMI is a religious organization, and I want to make sure I get the name right. It is the Noah's Ark Ministries International, NAMI. I did not know that such a thing existed. But anyway, there was a gentleman, and I think I've got his name in the handout. There was a gentleman who went to this organization, a Kurdish man, Parasut, who claimed that he had found a compartment from Noah's Ark and that he had taken photographs inside this compartment. And then he took these pictures to this organization that they then published, okay? And here's one of the pictures. He gave them this picture. Now notice there's no context to this. There's nothing on the outside. It's just the inside, right? And this is today widely regarded as a hoax, most likely not derived by the NAMI, but derived by this man trying to gain popularity, who then perpetrated the hoax against this organization in hopes that they would put the, you know, publicize the find of Noah's Ark and give him some popularity. So again, another one of these claims to have found Noah's Ark. Now, this last one is the only one I have on the list that does not claim, is not based around modern day Mount Ararat, okay? Mount Suleiman. Veteran Ed Davis claimed he saw the remains of Noah's Ark while he was stationed in Iran during World War II. So this is not Turkey, this is Iran. And then he claimed that he found all these beam-like, what looked like rock structures. And the claim was, well, this is petrified wood. You know, this is petrified wood that has turned into rock. And I found this, and this is probably from Noah's Ark. And the pictures, this is one of the structures here. This is one of the structures here that, again, it's rock, but he's saying, hey, this could be a big section of wood from Noah's Ark that has petrified and has become rocks. The biggest problem with this is that this mountain is nowhere close to the region that was Urartu. It's nowhere close to that region. I should have put the map in here twice, but I didn't. this mountain is way over here and Uritu is here. So this is a long way from anything that anyone has considered a possible location of the mountains of Ararat. So again, you know, 250 miles away from the farthest reaches of what would have been that ancient area. So that claim, you know, really doesn't hold much water. So why did I go through all of that? Really just to emphasize that, again, we have no idea where this thing is. But I want to ask this. Why do people look for it? Why do people look for it? There's two reasons I can think of. One, I think reason is personal glory. You know, again, I talked about Indiana Jones. You know, I'm forgetting at the moment which one of the movies it was, but this is the second one. He's talking to the little kid that's his companion, and he says, he's like, "What is that?" He goes, "This kid is fortune and glory." You know, it's fortune and glory. And so I think some of this is for glory, to make a name for yourself. If you were the one that discovered Noah's Ark, I mean, you would go down in history forever, right? But I think there's another reason. I think some who are not doing it for vanity, you know, for personal glory, for personal praise, are doing it with the idea that this is going to prove the Bible, right? This is going to prove the Bible. If we find this, no one's ever going to doubt anything ever again. It's going to change our world. Everybody's going to believe in the Bible. Everybody's going to believe that all this is true. It's going to prove that all the doubters were wrong. Would it do that? If somebody came out today and said, "Hey, this is Noah's Ark, and I got pictures, I got 360 degrees all the way around it, I can walk inside of it, I can even find animal bones on the inside of it," what do you think would happen? Everybody would think it was a hoax. Everybody would think it was a made-up story, somebody trying to get glory, whatever. But I believe there are people who think this is gonna settle the debate once and for all. This is the one tangible thing that's mentioned in the Bible that if we can find it, we'll talk about Ark of the Covenant later, but if we find this, this is going to prove it's all true. But what that makes me think of is that our relationship with Christ is not, or should not be, based on what we can see. It should not be based on what we can see. Because if we're only going to believe in what we can see, then we've forgotten about the nature of what faith is altogether, right? I mean, what did the Hebrew writer say? We always talk about the definition of faith. Faith is the what? The substance of things hoped for. So, I don't have it, but I have it, right? I can't touch it, but my faith allows me to touch it. It's the evidence of things, what? Not seen. I can't see it physically, but I can see it through the eyes of faith. You remember Thomas? What do we call Thomas? Doubting Thomas, right? Why? What did Thomas say? The other disciples were like, "We've seen the Lord. I will not believe unless what? Unless I can put my fingers and see that nail, put my fingers, put my hand in his side. I'm not going to believe unless." And then he saw him, right? And he said, "Thomas, come here. Put your hand in my side. See my hands." And he claimed his belief. And then what did Jesus say? "You have believed because you have seen me. Blessed are those who have not seen, yet have believed." I told, when we were going through Bible Bowl this afternoon, one of the questions that Mike had put in the slide deck was about what Jesus said to the Pharisees in Matthew 16, where he said, the only sign you're going to get is the sign of Jonah. We'll leave about what that sign actually was to another lesson. But right before that, the Pharisees and the scribes had said, "Show us a sign. You know, give us a miracle," right? And what did he say in response to that? Before, he said the only thing you're going to get is a sign of Jonah. What did he say? A wicked and adulterous, you know, depending on your translation, it's the wicked and the adulterous that ask for a sign, right? And I believe the implication of that is you have enough evidence. You have enough evidence. You don't need anything else. Again, what's the nature of faith? It's not what we can touch and what we can see. Faith allows us to touch and see. It's not a matter of whether we find Noah's Ark or we find the Ark of the Covenant or the Holy Grail, if there ever was such a thing. It's what we're able to see and touch because of our faith. All of us have to make a decision of what we're going to believe, right? What did Paul say in 1 Corinthians? The message of the cross is foolishness to the world. The world can't see it, right? They can't see the message. Why? Because God won't let them see it? No, because they choose not to see through the eyes of faith. Finding Noah's Ark is not going to change that. We have to make a decision of what we're going to allow ourselves to see through the eyes of faith. But in order to see through the eyes of faith, we have to decide we're going to put faith somewhere other than ourselves. Be open to the idea that there's something out there besides me. There's something out there besides me. We all have a choice. God has given us His plan. He has given us a world that everywhere we look screams that there has to be a creator. He's left behind His word that tells us what He did for us from beginning to end and what He continues to do for us today. What's left for us to decide, do we believe it? And if we do, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? What does our faith drive us to do? The first thing faith should drive you to do is respond. And if you're here tonight and you've never made those first steps of faith, this is a great opportunity to do that. We don't see with our eyes, we see with faith. And if our faith leads us to believe that there is a God who sent His Son, then we have to decide if we're going to respond to that. If there's anything else we can do for you, just because we have faith doesn't mean this life is going to be easy. So if there's anything else, any help you need, any prayers you need, encouragement that you need, please come while we sing our invitations.